Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. This episode is all about San Diego Comic-Con 2020, or Comic-Con at home, as it's known this year. Every year we cover Comic-Con, and this year it will be no different, except it's totally different. So here we go. Honestly, we're going to skip this year entirely because we all needed a break, but we decided against it. Amanda and John were mostly unavailable for this, though. John will pop up at some point in the podcast for the Dresden panel. But joining me for this episode are our Comic-Con insider from NoReruns.net, Kyle Nolan.
Howdy.
Howdy. Yeah, that enthusiasm. That's what I love right there. Sounds like somebody has just watched 68 hours of YouTube. And my host of the Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld podcast, Troy Heinrichs.
I'm still getting over the howdy. Dude's from like Boston, like pocket cod. He's like, oh, howdy, y'all.
It was so howdy. I'm beat.
I don't even know. What is the Boston hello? I don't even know what
hello,
that
hello, pocket cod. Like that.
Hello, hello. No, that's British.
You see this baseball bat? Oh, wait, no, that's the Bronx.
That's also Boston Networks. And I'm your host, Aaron Peterson. Find more info at thehollywoodoutsider.com. So this year, Comic-Con, for which many of you didn't know, is a huge event typically held at the San Diego Convention Center and all around downtown, where thousands of fans gather, often dressed as their favorite character from comics or genre films and TV, and they attend panels and workshops at those very same properties. It can be very hard to get access to Comic-Con, even being as huge as it is. So when you're there, you definitely feel like you're kind of part of an exclusive club, as well as a ton of special events that they have. They buy so much merchandise. They need a U-Haul when you're done. But this year it was all online because of, I don't know, some pandemic thing that's happening. And we had remote panels through YouTube videos, and they opened it up to the world, everyone, for the first time ever. Now, Kyle, you and I have gone to Comic-Con before as press. You still go every single year. You do a ton of interviews typically for Comic-Con, for NoReruns.net. What did you feel like this year? Somebody who's covered this event for so many years. I mean, I felt this was weird. Not bad, just weird. How did you feel? Did you feel like it was still had that Comic-Con stank?
It was definitely, like, I haven't gone to panels in a long time. For the last few years, I've only been doing press rooms and then the outside activations. So this was like going back to my Comic-Con roots, like just sitting through panel after panel after panel after panel. I thought they did a fairly decent job of trying to recapture that Comic-Con feeling. I was just shocked at the sheer number of panels they set up. So they had, I think, around 400 panels.
Is that the total? They had 400?
It was something like that, yeah.
Oh my God, that's so
And
many.
So they had a lot of the smaller panels that you would typically see there and a lot of the regular panels. So they did a good job of trying to keep the same exact type of programming that they would normally have at the con. Mm-hmm. They also provided printable badges and signs and audio clips if you wanted to play the sounds that they play in the rooms, like, please take your seats, no saving of seats. You could get that audio clip and play it in your house if you wanted to get that true feeling of the con.
That's pretty cool.
And then they still did their masquerade. I didn't watch it to see how it worked. And their Eisner Awards, which are like the comic industry awards. Right. They present those every year at the con. And they still did those online as well. So they did a good job of at least trying to capture that feeling of the con. And they had all kinds of, like, they still had all their merchants selling stuff online. They had a virtual convention floor that you click on the map and shop at the different stores. So they tried to lay it out like it was still, you were still at the con doing all your shopping if you were buying exclusives. And then they still tried to do, like, every year, Amazon has a big offsite where they do these massive installations for all their Amazon Prime shows. Man. So they tried to recapture that same type of spirit. They had, like, a Hannah escape room game that you could play. They had the boys. You could go get either a t-shirt or a tote bag.
Yeah, I got my t-shirt. Thanks to you, actually. So props to you.
So that the basically the app that you went through, they sent you to this website that you filled in and customized. That would be the same exact thing you would see on a tablet after you walked for 2 hours through their little they have TV screens showing episodes and other things, and then finally you get to that tablet 2 hours later and get to fill it out and pick your customized swag.
Yeah, that's the part that I think stood out to me the most is that, you know, I went as press, but who am I fooling? I also went as a fan. So I also stood in lines for many of the panels and whatnot. And that's the big difference. The cool thing about when you actually go to Comic-Con and you're actually at the event is there's an aura of inclusivity where everybody feels like they're part of the same team. You know, a lot of the world kind of has this divisiveness, especially the last couple of years or whatever, but there you never feel like that. Like everybody feels like they're playing for the same team. You'll see an Asian Spider-Man, a Black Wonder Woman, a Hispanic Superman, you know, whatever it is. Everybody is equal at Comic-Con. It's pretty fantastic if you're there. And that's the biggest part that I missed. But you don't have the lines like you have for Hall H where you're waiting for the biggest panels. That's pretty awesome because you almost never get in.
Yeah. And well, also the one thing about the lines is you end up standing next to people you never met before and you have these conversations and meet these different people. So that's something that also you miss when you're just sitting on your couch at home alone watching YouTube for 3.5 days.
You just made it sound so sad. So sad.
Well, the Wednesday before, like normally I meet up with a bunch of friends and we go and have dinner. So we did our own Zoom on Wednesday night, the preview night, so that we could at least recreate that part of the experience for everyone getting together.
That's really neat. Yeah,
good the night you. Before.
And preview night, for people that don't know, that's basically where they screen early releases of upcoming TV shows, usually comic themed, CW, that kind of stuff.
I felt they did a pretty good job, though, of like recreating the line experience, because you had when you signed up for these virtual panels, you actually like filled out a profile for yourself, and then your name showed up on the list of people that were going. So you at least had like who else was going to the panel. So if you wanted to have that conversation and try to meet randos online, I guess, so you could totally go ahead and have that experience if you wanted to.
That's a little creepier. See,
he's making it creepy.
Yeah.
I made it sound sad.
You sounded like stalker right there. See, we're talking about you're in line. You're like, hey, you like this thing too? Yeah, I like this thing too. What do you do? Here's what I do. How did you come to get, you know, and you end up like becoming these. You meet friends. You really do. You meet people and you become friends over the years.
Difference is virtually you don't go end up in a hotel room later.
Hey, I don't know what you do with these things, but that's not what I did. Kyle, I'm not speaking for you. But speaking of Troy, I'm really curious because, you know, Kyle and I have been. We've been several times. Kyle's been way more than I have. But you haven't. You've never actually been to Comic-Con. In fact, before the show, we were talking about it and you're like, well, it just reminds me of C2E2 or, local fan conventions, and it's like 20 times that. It's so crazy. What is it for you? You know, what did you think about Comic-Con at home? Did you enjoy this? Did it make you want to go to the real thing live? Should they have it next year?
The crowd wise, I think is the thing that always kept me away from going in the first place, because mm-hmm. I'm not a big crowd person first and foremost. I mean, C2E2 is massive for my tastes, like just getting across the floor was like ridiculous here in Chicago. So from the crowd perspective, I don't think like I'm missing anything other than making like friends and long lasting relationships if I'd go on a regular basis, which is fun because we do that at any other conference that we would normally go to for work or other purposes. But I think that there wasn't much loss from a panel perspective other than just the energy of the audience. And so I just pulled up my MLB The Show and I was able to pipe in my crowd noise and have some extra fans with me. And it all seemed like the same experience from what I could tell.
There was one panel I was at where the guy had a little button that he would press to simulate the crowd cheering during the panel.
Get out. That's fantastic. Good for him.
I mean, like things like that, though, I think help the production value for things where you're doing this virtual conferencing at home, because you kind of get that same experience. I felt like watching the panels, some were really well produced, some that we'll talk about tonight. They even had the Comic-Con name tents that you would normally have at the panels. They had those in the lower thirds for a lot of the people. Mm-hmm. I felt that gave it a real nice like feeling like you were there. Others, kind of phoned it in a little bit, and it was some really crappy Zoom audio that cut out quite a bit. So it made the panels a little bit distracting. So I think if they were to do this again, I'd like to see some consistency across the content that was being put out. Because sometimes it felt like, oh, this is an Apple panel, and you can tell because the splits on the video between what they were showing from slides to videos definitely felt very Apple. And then you had Amazon, who had their banner and their content and their branding in a very Amazon-specific way. And then Sony had their thing in a very specific... So it was like, it felt like all of the partners put their content together and then sent it to Comic-Con versus Comic-Con saying, here's the template, here's the format, here's what we want to do.
Yeah.
Which I think is what you would normally see then if you went to the actual panels live. Is you'd have that real Comic-Con feel versus the studios pushing the content out.
Which... That part I don't think I quite understood, because you know that these were all pre-recorded, right? None of these were live that I could tell. I mean, they all had cuts, various cuts here and there. So why not clean it up a little bit more? You know, when you had freezes and that sort of thing, I don't know why they needed to keep that. Kyle, do you have any insight into that? Because you might know.
No, I'm not sure. I did notice that myself. Some of them I did see that they did cut, or they tried to joke about it. There were definitely some that were far more edited than others, where they would cut away. Like if someone froze, they purposely cut to somebody else so that you wouldn't see that person frozen. Others just left it on wide zoom mode the whole time, and you just saw everything that was going on. And then there were some that left people with their own home backgrounds, and others that definitely tried to enforce, like, here's a screen that we want behind you so that everyone is just behind a plain screen.
And some of them were really cool. I think the Bill and Ted one was probably my favorite. That one just looked very jazzy presentation. You know, everybody was behind electrical bolts and, you know, shockwaves and that sort of thing. It was just kind of a cool look. I wish more people were. I think Vikings did a similar thing too.
Yeah. Did these like windows around the people to make them look like they were like looking out of like a ship window or something.
I dug that one. That was really good. Yeah. And the best thing I found about all this is usually when you're going to a panel, if it happens to be, and I hate to say this because, you know, you don't want to belittle anyone, but sometimes panels can be boring. Sometimes they're not as exciting or lively as you would like them to be. And if you're waiting, because if you don't know, when you go to Comic-Con and you get into a room, you can actually stay in that room the whole day. So you'll actually get in there earlier for a panel you don't want to see. So you can see a panel that's starting, you know, three panels from then. And I don't have to stay in the panel anymore. I can just either skip ahead. If there's a little too much agenda going on, I can just skip right through that. I can close the panel out. I can go to the next. I do like that. That was nice.
Or in the case of Kyle, you know, 5x speed was able to help him get through the entire conference in 2 days.
Only 1.5 times speed.
What was the total? But,
1.5. I got you.
Okay. Was it 68? Is that what you said? That's how many panels you watched?
I think that's it said how many I checked off in the MySced. I'm pretty sure I watched almost all of those, except then there were others like, after you finish watching a panel, it would say starting up, like the normal YouTube. It would just start playing something else. There were a couple of those that are like, oh, I didn't check this one, but I'll just stick around. Like there was some animated voice actor one. I'm like, this looks kind of interesting. And then I just ended up watching that. So, yeah, I think it was probably around 68 or so that I ended up watching.
God, man. Well, you know what? We're going to go ahead and get right into that, because we're going to talk about some of the bigger moments that came out of Comic-Con this year. So we'll expand on those. Some of them we will. Some of them we won't. We're just kind of going to go through them. But there will be a lot to enjoy here. You're basically just getting as much of the big, fun information that we got from Comic-Con this year as we can throw into one podcast. You can also find Comic-Con's international YouTube channel, and I think the panels are going to be up for a while, or are they taking them down? I don't know what the rules are on this.
They didn't give an exact thing. They said some will be up for a while, some won't. Probably whoever, if there's certain deals, especially if there was content included that they can't keep up for a long time, maybe they'll take those down. Or
So you better hurry. If there's something you hear and you really want to check that out, go to the Comic-Con YouTube channel quickly. Very, very quickly. We're going to start with Kyle's panel because he saw everything. So let's see what you got. Let's see what we can talk about here.
Well, I mainly concentrated on TV related panels. I don't think I watched any movie related panels.
That's all right. I got movies covered.
I figured that. Yeah. So the first one I'm going to talk about is the Marvel 616, which is a new Disney Plus show that's coming.
Okay.
So I had recently caught up on all their their documentary shows. Like they had one for The Mandalorian and Frozen. So this one sounded interesting. It's basically an 8-episode anthology series. Each episode is a different director, and it's a different tone and different style for each episode, but they're all covering some aspect of the 80-year history of Marvel Comics. And so they showed clips and talked about two of the episodes. They wouldn't talk about any of the other ones. So one of them was Gillian Jacobs. She directed one called Higher, Further, Faster, Trailblazing Women of Marvel Comics. Mm. And it's pretty much exactly what it sounds like talking. She had never even read a comic before working on this.
Really?
And now she loves comics. But so it's all about the women who worked at Marvel Comics behind some of these big characters. They showed a story. Part of it, the clip showed them talking about Ms. Marvel and how that came about. And so it looked kind of interesting. Completely different tone and everything for the second one they showed, which is Paul Scheer, who directed one called Lost and Found. And so he's on a hunt to find forgotten comics and characters. And you can see some of the wild, weird characters that have shown up in the comics over the years. And you can just sense his joy and excitement over finding these obscure characters. So he's actually in his episode and he's interviewing these people. And that one looks like it's going to be really fun. They wouldn't even talk about all the different characters because they didn't want to spoil them. But that one looks like it could be really good.
That sounds really
They never announced a premiere date for the show, so I'm not sure when that's coming. But
is it Disney Plus, I assume?
It's Disney Plus, yep.
Oh, well, they are getting new stuff then. Good for them. They just delayed Falcon, like all their Marvel shows. They got to dump something out there soon.
Well, they don't have to do anything for 3 years because that's what we all bought in for.
Exactly, yeah. I'm locked in.
That's what,
suckers.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier coming 2024. You guys got to re-up?
Oh, no, I got to renew. So then another one I watched all three of the Walking Dead panels. So they had those pretty much back to back. They did Fear the Walking Dead, and the Walking Dead World Beyond, which is a new show that's coming. So Chris Cardwick moderated these panels, and one nice thing they did was, since there were so many cast members, they end up splitting each panel into two groups of people. You weren't watching like 12 people on the screen, which barely anyone getting to talk.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They did a nice job of splitting that up to give everyone time to talk. So some of the announcements that came out of that were that the Walking Dead season 10 finale will air on October 4th. But also that season 10 will now be extended and there'll be 6 extra episodes that are going to air in early 2021. So we'll get 6 more episodes because the season 11 won't air in October as it normally does. They didn't say when it's actually going to air.
All right, well, let me clarify something on this. So the season 10 finale is going to be in October, but it's season 10 itself is getting 6 more episodes. So doesn't that mean that technically the finale will be in 2021?
Yes, but this was the one episode that they didn't get to finish before that we were waiting on.
So the episode that was supposed to be the finale will be, yes. Okay, all right.
And so then I guess it'll have 6 more episodes and have a new finale, a second finale, but whenever those actually air.
So 7 total.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Okay.
My guess is they probably already started filming the season 11 and just repurposed those as now season 10.
Gotcha.
Right, so you have to pay for it as another season pass on your iTunes account?
I hope not. I hope you get these extra 6 episodes as part of your original season 10 pass, but we'll see. And then the new show, Walking Dead, World Beyond, also premieres that same night on October 4th, and they'll have a Walking Dead or Talking Dead episode to cover both of those episodes. So the World Beyond, it basically takes place 10 years into the apocalypse and follows these kids that grew up in a very safe area who are now venturing off into the real world and dealing with the zombie threat, which they call empties, not walkers.
They call empties?
They call them empties, yes.
Okay.
And the Whisperers takes place because it's a 6-year time jump from when the events of the bridge happen, correct? So is it like, so this will be 2 years after where we are from the current cast?
I did not do the math and no one asked that question, so I'm not sure about that. And then also Fear the Walking Dead, season 6, that premieres the following week. So that'll be airing along with World Beyond, the both on the same night.
I gotta tell you, man, I watched the trailer for World Beyond and I was bored beyond belief. I just didn't. I mean, it looked okay. Very cinematic shots, but it just felt very, this is the CW's version of Walking Dead. Not to throw shade at the CW, but you know what I'm saying.
Oh, it definitely felt like The 100 meets zombies to me when I saw the trailer. So,
well, AMC is CWA for Canada. No, just kidding. If you turn it upside down.
Wow. That just happened. I can't take it back, people. That just happened.
So then I watched.
Did they talk about the movie at all? Did they talk about The Walking Dead movie?
No, they didn't mention that at all.
What?
Has anybody mentioned it since Rick left the show?
I feel like Rick leaves the show.
Hey, there's three movies, and then nobody ever talked about it after that.
Yeah, weird.
So I assume they're still coming, but no one asked about it, and they didn't mention it.
So does that mean nobody wants Rick back? Is that the feeling we're getting?
They did have Maggie. Maggie's coming back. They did have her on there
in season 10B.
I think she might be back in this finale in that one episode.
Spoiler alert.
I had then gone through and watched a whole bunch of animation related panels. So the first one was the Warner Archives Secret Origins of Saturday Morning Cartoons, which I thought was going to be a lot more about the origins of Saturday Morning Cartoons, but it was more of a sales pitch for a lot of Warner Archives stuff.
Wow, wow, wow.
But they did have an interesting discussion about, like, the history of color TV and how there was a format war for color TV. And they did talk a bit about cartoons and how they evolved. But some of the announcements came out of that was that they had just remastered the Flintstones for Blu-ray, and that's going to be coming out soon.
Ooh.
And they also have Blu-rays coming for the original Space Ghost cartoon series, as well as a second volume of the Tex Avery Screwball classics are in the works as well.
That's exciting.
People are like, Space Ghost, that was great in the 90s. And we're like, no, people. The original Space Ghost.
Yeah, exactly.
1962 or whatever the hell, 72.
Not Coast to Coast or whatever.
The real Space Ghost.
The real Space Ghost.
And then I watched a whole bunch of Fox animation panels, there was a common theme that they were all following, which was basically, we're animation. We never stopped working. So here's how we transitioned in 3 days from working in the office to working from home. And then a lot of them were talking about their setups at home to record their voices and how that change had happened.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Those were Duncanville, Bob's Burgers, The Simpsons, Bless the Hearts, American Dad, Family Guy, and Archer. And some of them actually tried some unique things with their panels. I think the most unique was Bless the Hearts, which did a paint and sip, where basically they provided all of the people on the panel with boxed wine and painting supplies, and they had them all painting their characters, or in the case of Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
There we go.
So even Lord and Miller were there painting characters as well. So they were actually good about continuing on with their whole panel while they were painting and drinking wine. And then at the end, they announced that all their pictures that they were painting were going to be put on auction for charity.
Well,
American
pretty cool.
Dad tried something similar, but they just basically turned their whole panel into a drawing lesson and forgot to answer questions most of the time and basically just turned it into a how to draw one character. And they had all the people try to draw the character, but they weren't auctioning off those photos.
You know, we got to wonder if maybe animation's going to do that permanently from now on. Like, people can work from their home more often as opposed to coming all the way into a studio. I mean, like, a lot of businesses are transitioning now. I wonder if a lot of animation studios will do that.
Yeah, a lot of them seem to like it. I mean, the thing they missed was obviously, like, the writers hate the Zoom writers' room. They prefer the energy of being all in the same room. The actors didn't mind so much the recording from home, but again, they prefer to, especially the ones where they were recording all together in the same room, they were missing that as well. But the ones that recorded generally separately anyway, it didn't really change anything. The only big announcement, Archer announced that Jamie Lee Curtis is going to be doing a recurring guest on their show.
Yes!
Apparently, Judy Greer found out that she was a huge fan while working on the Halloween movie and suspected that that's why she got the job on the Halloween movie, was because she was a fan of Archer and wanted to meet her.
I don't know if that's true, Judy, but we'll go with that. Sure.
And then also, the Archer returns on September 16th, and most of those animated shows return on September 27th, because those were all kept going. Then another animated panel was for a new Netflix show called Hoops. This was like a car wreck that you just couldn't look away from, this panel. It was moderated by Max Greenfield, who he's in a couple episodes of the show, but was in New Girl with Jake Johnson, who is the main star of this show. It's basically it's a raunchy, filthy comedy about a high school baseball or basketball team. And it's this guy and his father, and his father's or his mother is dating another guy who is best friends with the father. So it's this whole weird relationship comedy. The show itself actually looked like it was fun. The panel, so many funny people on it, but it was like so many failed jokes and just really awkward panel of them. Like, I couldn't tell if they're really fighting or if it was meant as like a bit that they were doing during the show, during the panel, but that show premieres on August 21st on Netflix, and they're dropping the whole season like Netflix does.
I don't understand. How do you bomb that kind of panel? I mean, you're talking about it's a sexual relationship comedy. You're balls in holes all over the place. I mean, layups. There's all kinds of analogies you could throw out there. I don't understand. They're wasting their opportunities.
Yeah, they were fighting more with each other and trying to make jokes, like inside jokes, it felt like, more than actually talking about the show. But they showed a nice clip of the show, which you got a sense of what the show was, even though they didn't talk too much about it.
And that makes a difference, right? Because if you're actually at Comic-Con, if you're actually in the audience, you can feel the vibe of the audience, so you know when something's not working. You can't tell that on YouTube. So they just keep going with it. And it's like, wow, you're just like scratching glass right now. Stop it.
Well, at one point, Max Greenfield was like yelling at Jake Johnson saying, the panel's still going. We'll do this afterwards. So like, it sounded like, why wouldn't you cut some of this stuff out? Like you were saying before, like if it was some really awkward thing, it just felt very weird. I couldn't tell if it was still meant as a joke or if it was real.
That's too bad.
So then another one I watched was the Star Trek Lower Decks. They had a long Star Trek Universe panel for three different shows. This was the middle portion. I only watched this because I don't watch Picard or Discovery. So this,
Trey hates you. He's looking at you right now. He, like, he just hates you.
I don't get all access. I may have to get it for this. But this show looked like a lot of fun. It basically follows a second contact crew of one of Starfleet's least important ships. And so like this is like the B or C crew that goes and explores after first contact has already been made. And so they released a clip from the first episode, and it looks really fun. It has Jack Quaid, Jerry O'Connell, Paul Scheer, and a bunch of other funny people. And that premieres on August 6th, the first episode, and then it's weekly because it's CBS All Access.
I would watch that. I think I would watch that.
Well, you wouldn't watch it because it's a cartoon and you don't watch cartoons.
That sounds like a fun take on Star Trek, though. I would rather watch that show if they would make it with real people, but you can't make things with real people right now, so cartoons are all we're going to have from now on. That's what I got.
They had some funny bits, but it felt like it was the standard Star Trek bits that they were doing. So I don't know if it was overly funny. It just made me miss the Orville that much more.
I do love Orville.
They were saying this was the first comedy from the Star Trek universe. So
correct.
It's a new, they're going where no one has gone before.
Oh, jeez. See, that's the kind of stuff Troy's talking about. That right there. Exactly what he's talking about.
Are you doing a captain's log? That's so cute.
And so then my final cartoon panel was an HBO Max did a Looney Tunes cartoons panel.
Yay.
So I haven't watched this show yet, but it's they showed really a brand new cartoon that's not available yet on HBO Max. So that's one reason to check out the panel. But one interesting thing they talked about was recreating the whole look from the original cartoons. Mm-hmm. And that same feel. And they were even saying, like, when they first showed footage, people were saying, so when are you going to show us the new cartoons? Because they thought it was the original cartoons, the way that they, the way that it looked and felt. So
they're great. They are great. I wouldn't even say reinterpretation. Like, it's a modern cartoon, but those cartoons were always so far ahead of the time. Honestly, they were. So it looks great. They've done a great job of capturing nostalgia and making it current. With Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Don't mention of the Animaniacs coming back, though.
They didn't talk about that at all. This was just about the Looney Tunes show.
Nobody's talking
about that. Bugs Bunny is so 1920s.
Bugs Bunny is cooler than any Animaniacs.
No, the clip
ever
they
were.
Showed, it was Daffy and Porky, and they were going to do some delivery, and they're worried about getting a 5-star rating on their delivery app. So it was they've definitely modernized the story.
That's fun.
That's cool.
And then just some other quick ones. So one thing that I always enjoy about the panels, like, I look more for the ones that are just going to be entertaining, that have a good entertaining cast, mm-hmm. that gel together and just provide a fun time rather than necessarily getting huge announcements. And one thing that I missed from a lot of panels, like at Comic-Con, you normally get these fun videos that they do, that they say you have to turn off your cameras and you can't record this because this is exclusive for the Comic-Con audience. And no one was doing those fun type of videos, except Superstore started with a whole video with them, all the different characters preparing to go to Comic-Con and go to San Diego. And of course they couldn't go and there were problems, but so they actually did one of those funny videos, which was nice. And then
that's cool.
just the general conversation with the cast was fun. And I had a similar feeling with the Goldbergs, which they had the whole cast there, or most of the cast there, and just good to see them interact. I was shocked how much that Sean, who plays Adam, is pretty much the same as his character. I don't think he has to act. Like, he seems the same type of quiet, nerdy type of guy. But a couple announcements from that one. So each season of that starts off with some homage to a movie, and season 8 will be Airplane that they're doing. So that should be entertaining.
I love it. That's so cool.
The season 7 finale, which they didn't get to shoot, was supposed to include a wedding. They didn't say who was getting married, because they're going to just move that to somewhere in season 8.
If anybody's getting married, it's Big Tasty, because Big Tasty does everything.
There's a character called Big Tasty on this show?
That's his nickname.
His nickname.
Do they want to know what it means?
He gave it to himself, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because he's like a mad rapper, and he's got mad sports skills, but he really doesn't.
Okay.
Aaron actually met the JTP. True story.
I did. I did not know who they were.
They only had one member of the JTP on the panel.
Hope it wasn't boring Matt Bradley.
It was Jeff.
JTP, we were on, what was that, the Paramount lot for Blacklist, and...
Sony. No, Sony. Oh,
sorry.
I think it was at the Sony lot.
Sorry, we were at the... No, it was a Paramount lot.
I was pretty sure it was Sony.
No, it wasn't Sony's lot. It was Paramount's lot. Because remember, there was a Paramount thing. I took a picture in front of it.
We were at both places that day. But I think we saw the JTP at Sony, because Goldberg's does shoot on the Sony lot.
All right, well, let's just say this. We were on a lot.
Yeah. we were at an actual studio.
We were on a studio lot for the Blacklist, and we were getting a tour of that particular lot that was such a great tour. We're not sure exactly where that tour was. So we're walking around, and we ran into the JTP, and Troy lost his frickin' mind. I had no idea who they were. He's like, get a picture with them. I'm like, okay. And they're like, you want a picture? I'm like, not really. So I still don't really know who they are, but I can tell you Troy was very excited.
I would have been excited, Troy.
Well, I recognized Matt Bradley, and I was like, is that Matt Bradley? That looks like Matt Bradley. And I just went, we were just like, didn't look at him, just kept walking down the separate sides. And I just went, JTP. And they went, JTP. And I was like, oh, that's so awesome.
It's still not funny to me because I don't know who these people are.
So then just a couple more panels. So Wynonna Earp had a panel. They're coming back right now for their fourth season. yeah, fourth season finally starting up. So
that's been like a couple
years. The first half of the fourth season. They've only done six of the episodes. But they theirs was just another fun panel where the actors were just playing games, and they're basically trying to imitate each other or being quizzed on their coworkers. So that ended up being quite a bit of fun to watch that. And then similar, there was a the annual Entertainment Weekly Brave Warriors panel, which they have every year. It's basically a bunch of guys from various shows who play like the hero characters that this was another one where they just asked them like fun questions. So they were basically talking about their worst jobs they've ever had, what their first photo headshots were like, some awkward intimate scenes that they had to do. And so it was just fun questions not related directly to their show that they're currently on, but it was just an entertaining panel. And then finally, there was a Scary Good TV, a conversation with horror's top showrunners. So they had people from the upcoming Chucky series, Lock and Key, Creepshow, and Nosferatu. And so that was an interesting panel. Greg Nicotero was there for Creepshow. And so he was talking about how they couldn't even, like, George Romero couldn't even do stuff and Land of the Dead that they were able to do in Walking Dead season one. Mm-hmm. Like, so how the times have changed of what they're allowed to show on TV. And then they also talked about some other tackling serious issues like suicide, mental issues in horror shows.
They also announced that Brad Dourif is going to revisit Chucky for that series. He's going to do the voice again for Chucky. I don't know if it was in that panel, but they did announce that.
No, they didn't. They mentioned in the panel, but that was announced, I think, a few days before the panel.
Yeah, but that's huge. Like, I got excited. I went, I wasn't excited about that show at all, because I thought, not that Mark Hamill was, I thought he did a fine job in the film, but Brad Dourif is iconic in that, so I got really stoked for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that show.
Woohoo!
And that's some of the panels that I...
Jesus, that man. We're gonna take a 20. We'll be back in 2 and 2. Oh, wait. We can't do Chuck Willery jokes anymore. I think it got canceled. All right. So, Troy. I'm kidding. Troy, are you there?
Well, the majority of my stuff revolved around, you guessed it, space and robots.
Oh, sweet.
But I did I had a lot of fun this quarantine period playing a lot of video games again. And especially this year with like the big titles like Ghost of Tsushima and Last of Us 2 coming out, as well as Final Fantasy VII Remake, I thought it'd be interesting to learn more about stories in video games, because that's why I play video games, is for the story and just being immersed in a world. And so there was a really great panel about narrative design for computer games and what does it mean to do the narrative piece of it. And it's not so much just writing the story. They actually have to work with all the different departments, because when they go from, say, writing on one game to another game, Anne Toole, who actually was one of the writers on Horizon Zero Dawn, she was on the panel, and she talked about how at one particular studio, she's like, yeah, I was thinking, like, for this scene, we're going to have a spider, and it's going to, like, crawl across the ceiling and then fall down on the player. And then the developers are like, yeah, we can't do that. She's like, what do you mean you can't do that? She's like, yeah, we can't. Our engine that actually drives the game doesn't have that capability in it. And so you might go from one engine that has that capability, but then go to another game company that doesn't have that capability. Mm. So you really have to work with all the different departments, from sound and development and audio and graphics and the director, rather than just sitting down and writing a show. So it's very much like almost like a 22-episode TV series where the creators of the game will tell you, here are the signposts that we need to hit. And then you have to craft the world around it. But more importantly, they have to craft not only the dialogue trees of the main characters, but they have to like describe the scenery, and they have to actually have these books that they then send to the coders so that the coders are actually working off of the same frame so that everything speaks the same language as you go through, like almost like a branding file, if you will, when you're making a website.
Did it give you some insight into how they do these games? Like from somebody who plays them, do you kind of have a new appreciation for how they do the stories?
Not actually so much the coding of the game and the making the artwork of the game, but when it comes to the stories, it's like, oh, I can see why they made that narrative choice, because that narrative choice was either because the technology wasn't there for a better choice to be done, mm-hmm. or the signposts that they needed to get to, they just didn't have the time because, again, everything's still on a budget, so they had to shorten out stuff. One of the guys, Harris Orkin, who worked on Command & Conquer in The Division, he was there, and he said that he had written an entire tree arc that was like probably Act 1 of the game and had to scrap the whole thing because it just didn't work with where Act 3 was coming. And so they had to completely go back and rewrite the whole thing. And it was just like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine like having your entire work scrapped just like that. But the one term I did find out is the when you have the NPC characters that yell out stuff, especially like in Last of Us 2, when they're like, oh my gosh, it's Annie, and she's down. You know, yeah. When they like, hey, behind you, Merc, you know, things like that. It's called a bark, like a dog bark. So that's the gaming
term. It's supposed to grab the gamer's attention so they know to focus on an item, right?
Correct. Yep. Exactly. So it's called a bark. So that was kind of cool. Learned about that. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting panel. It was something a little bit different, not TV movie related, and wasn't, you know, comic book related, but still games are a big part of the entertainment industry, and it's more of an entertainment convention over the years that Comic-Con has come, especially the one in San Diego. So I thought this was a cool way to do the art side of comics and then put it towards a video game. But very interesting. It's called Narrative Design for Computer Games, if you want to check that out. So let me move into outer space. And I went to the, first and foremost, the Back to the Moon and Beyond with NASA. This was absolutely fascinating.
You were talking about this. Why? Well, I mean, you're going to explain it in a second, but why so fascinating? What about
one,
this?
It was moderated by Captain Kirk, Mr. Bill Shatner.
Did the whole
himself.
Thing go like this?
He did not talk short, but he was so like the I think the coolest thing about this is that you think that, you know, for all of Star Trek and the space stuff that he's done over the years, that he'd have more understanding of space and what space is all about. And even he was like, you can do that? That's fascinating. Like he was like a kid in a candy store just taking in this information. And I think that's what made the panel really super interesting. Otherwise, it just would have been a standard NASA briefing for the most part. But basically what it was...
you needed a personality, right? To make that energized.
Absolutely. But they basically went through and talked about what the Artemis mission is all about. So there'll be the SLS is the brand new rocket, which is actually going to be bigger than the Saturn V was back in the day. And then Orion is the capsule that's going to be on top of Artemis. And then they have Artemis 1, 2, and 3, where 1 is a test flight to get to the moon. Artemis 2 is then the lunar orbit around the moon. And then Artemis 3 will be the first woman landing on the moon in 2024 is the target. But the cooler thing is that what they're going to do once they get to the moon is that they're actually going to build a habitat on the moon. And then they're going to build like an RV so that you can actually leave the habitat for extended periods of time, like days going camping, so that they can actually
on the
do
moon?
More exploration on the moon.
Get out of here.
When are they going to build the Starbucks?
that's they next. Could. You know, that's next. while that's all going on the surface, they're also going to launch what's called Gateway. So think a smaller version of the International Space Station that's going to be orbiting the moon as kind of like a launch off point where it'll float up there and then you can come up and down between the surface of the moon and back up to Gateway. And then Gateway can sustain life for 30 days before resupplyment from Earth. But then Gateway will eventually be like the launching off point to go to Mars. But I think what's really cool about all of this is that while all of this is happening, the things that they're doing is that trying to find ways to create water, oxygen, fuel with the materials that are on the moon. It's all science and research and study that they're doing in order to get to the Mars mission.
Oh, wow.
In the future. So what they were talking about was that, and this was the funny part of the panel, was that I believe her name was, I'm totally, Lenitra Tate, and she's like a PhD in chemistry. And she said, you know, like the TIE fighter ships in Star Wars. And Shatner just like fell out of his chair. It was like, did you say Star Wars? Star Wars, really? But no, then she's like, I'm sorry, Bill. I meant like the ion pulsing cannons, the blue light you see around the engines in the Star Trek ships. That blue light is actually possible, and that's what they're actually working on right now. and these ion engines are going to be what's going to power in Gateway through solar electric collection.
That's crazy.
So that it can be up there forever. So, like, that much closer to Star Trek once again as we go through life.
You know what that means? That means that all the people that are saying, I want off this planet, you might get a shot.
You might. And then the goal is obviously Mars sometime in the 30s is the goal. So if you want to know more, you can go to nasa.gov/Artemis to learn about the Artemis missions.
They want
to
be to Mars in the 2030s?
Yeah.
That's not far off, man. That's like a decade.
That's not far off.
Wow.
Yeah.
We might see this in our lifetime.
We might.
I got to try not to die. Stay away, COVID.
So when you take that from the reality side of the world, you go back to the fictional side of the world. Probably one of the better shows on Apple TV Plus when it launched was For All Mankind. This is kind of an alternative history show that finished up its first season.
I just love how you say that, like it's definitive, as in there's no opinion to this. It's just one of the best shows out there.
It is one of the best shows. If you watch it, it was really entertaining from start to finish.
I believe,
not what I expected
I believe
the show
you.
To be.
I believe you.
It's good. But it's, you know, the premise of the first season was that if there was an alternate history where Russia got to the moon first, what would that do to the American space program? So then America focuses putting the first woman on the moon. And obviously Sonia Wagler from Penelope Widmore, I mean, Molly Cobb in the show, lost fans, lost joke. But Molly Cobb is basically that first American woman. And the whole idea was that Nixon wanted like the Playboy model to put on the moon with her astronaut husband. And that was going to be the cover of like what America stood for. And Molly Cobb's character is not that way, but she is the first woman to go to the moon. And just the real stories of these characters. So in season two, which was the big thing of the panel, they talked about what's going to happen as they jump forward from the early 70s at the end of season one. They're jumping to 83 in season two, and it's all about the Russians, the Cold War, nuclear, all that stuff. Because there's some Russian-American hostilities that happen on the moon in season one, because they're up there at the same exact time surveying the same place.
Okay.
So it was a pretty, and they had a trailer for the second season, so you can check that out. That one was For All Mankind. Jumping over then to even before For All Mankind's time frame, if we flash back even further into the 50s, Disney Plus is going to be doing another recreation of The Right Stuff. That's going to be out in fall of 2020, and it's going to focus on the Mercury 7. And instead of the Right Stuff this time, which was a book and a movie previously, instead of focusing on the 7 from the training and the mission and the space aspect of it, this version of the Right Stuff is going to focus on the families and what do the wives and the husbands and the kids have to go through as part of this program where they put their lives at stake every single day. And they basically it was a bunch of the actors talking about some interesting facts that they found out about the Mercury 7. For example, the Glenns, like John Glenn, like wrote love letters to his wife all the time.
Did he?
And so it's part of this research for the show.
How did
they
he mail
really
them?
Read all those letters.
How did he mail
and,
them? This is an important question, Troy, and you're zipping right over it. How did he mail these letters?
This is like when they were like he was in Houston and she was back home.
Because this would have been so cool of a story.
The postage was so expensive.
Right? It was.
Here's 2,700 letters I've got for you.
But to get in the character, Patrick Adams, who's playing John Glenn, actually read the letters to Nora Zettner, who's playing Annie Glenn. And he actually found out a little bit from Nora that Annie Glenn in real life had a stuttering problem. And so when Annie was able to actually talk on the phone to John Glenn directly, it was like one of the highlights of John Glenn's life. Hmm. And so they actually play up that scene through the course of this adaptation, I guess you want to call it, of The Right Stuff. So that'll be coming to Disney Plus in the fall of 2020. And it's actually a Nat Geo show. It's not a Disney show.
Interesting.
So that'll be fun. And then because we're in the Disney World and we're going to outer space, you cannot skip over the fact that Candace is finally getting her own movie, Candace Against the Universe. Phineas and Ferb is returning to Disney Plus. They had creators Dan and Swampy talking about all the times they had working on The Simpsons and how they met and how the first Phineas character was drawn back in 1997. So Phineas and Ferb has been around theoretically for almost 27 years, and it's just crazy. And then Ashley Tisdale was there talking about how for her to find Candace once again and how she just fell right back in the role It was really great. And they basically played the opening musical number from the show as part of the panel. So you can see that as Phineas and Ferb in Candace Against the Universe.
I did watch that one as well as part of my huge animation stint.
It was a fun panel. I laughed a lot.
One interesting thing of that was the guy who does the voice of Perry was saying that he basically gets paid a fortune just to do that one little clicking sound with his voice.
He gets paid for that? Like that?
He gets paid. Yeah. That's it. It was him. He did it himself.
Like, you would think they would just have this recorded and they would just reuse it.
Yeah, but he and just give him residuals
for the same thing.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he has a sweet studio setup, by the way. To do all his voiceover stuff. It was awesome.
Yeah, he was in another panel that I watched about the voice actors. And
then I watched, this one was really interesting. It was actually the philosophy of Star Wars and Star Trek. And so you would think this would be your standard Comic-Con fight, fight, fight kind of panel. Yeah. But this was actually really interesting. It was two psychologists who were fans of each show paired with Todd Stashwick, who played Talik in Star Trek Enterprise, and then Jennifer Murrow, who was the writer of the web series Forces of Destiny. And so you had like two actors or connectors to the show with two actual clinical psychologists teaming up. The trick was, though, is that Jennifer couldn't talk about Star Wars. She had to talk about Star Trek. And Todd had to talk about Star Wars instead of Star Trek. So it was a little bit of a switch. And they talked about things like, for example, the Mandalorians versus the Klingons. Who has the better honor system, hold to their creed, hold to their code, and how does it relate to people in the race today? And so they had a real good conversation about how, like, Klingons are most like humans because there's different factions of Klingons, like there's different races of humans, where the Mandalorians could just be anybody because it's not a race, it's a way of life.
And so this is the way, right?
Yeah, this is the way. The other one was Luke versus...
Just to clarify, it was it's the psychology of Star Trek versus Star Wars. So if people are looking for that panel, not you said philosophy, it's a psychology.
Oh, psychology. Yep. Yeah, sorry, psychology, yep. Yes. Psychology of Star Wars and Star Trek. So the second one they did was Luke versus Luke, Jean-Luc in this case. And it was a conversation around emotional intelligence and experiencing trauma and how you overcome that trauma. And so, like, Picard lost his whole family, and then he had to lose him again when you watch Star Trek Generations. And then he was captured by the Borg and then had to fight the Borg. Luke is the same way. He loses his caregivers. And then because of the loss he experiences there and the loss of his father and then the death of his father, how that turns into how he acts as an adult and does his emotional maturity actually, like, work through to help him figure out and solve those problems and who does it the best. And so I thought that was really interesting to see how Rey in the later trilogies like helps him find his direction, where, spoiler alert for Kyle, when he finally gets CBS All Access, Data helps Picard find his way in Picard.
Yeah, it was a really interesting panel, that one was. Like, that's one of those where I just put on just because it sounded interesting, but I'm like, there's no way this is going to work for an hour. It was really fascinating to listen to. I'm like, you're just dissecting fictional characters. And I am fascinated by the actual psychology on fictional characters. It was actually really interesting.
And then the whole, the last one they did was like Rey versus Burnham. So the new characters in these franchises and how do they relate to each other about how do you keep your mental well-being and self-care when you're basically the sole person who has to save the universe and going through all that like mindfulness kind of stuff. That's like a big hot topic right now. So I just thought it was really fascinating that it's not just a, you know, fandoms yelling at each other. It actually had some purpose to it, which is really nice.
Depth.
To finish off my space race, of course, it is the final season of The 100. And so Octavia, Raven, Murphy, Echo, Hope, Russell, and then the showrunner, Jason, was there having a panel. But what I thought was really nice is they've been to Comic-Con every year. It's a big panel. Everybody, the fans show up. Out of all the panels I watched, this was the only one where they actually took fan questions, which I thought was really nice. Mm. And so there was the ones I watched, at least. And so there was a lot of fan interaction with that and answering questions and just, you know, crazy moments from the time on the show. And, you know, what do you guys do for fun now that the show's over? Like, what did you do once quarantined? Because they literally went from being quarantined in Vancouver for season 7 to film the show. And then once the show wrapped, it was literally straight into quarantine for real life. Was one of the things Marie was saying, who plays Octavia. She's like, I thought I was going to be able to like go to the beach and go swimming and have some fun and whatever. And it's like, it's literally like my life all over again, living in the bunker in season 4. What was really cool about the panel is that the people that weren't on the panel, then like all the other actors over the years, like chimed in and had a little goodbye message for the fans. So you heard from Gabriel, Eliza and Bob popped in, Clark and Bellamy, Josephine popped in, Monty and Harper, Charles Pike even popped in from season 3. Luna was there, Jaha was there, Abby was there, Lexa was there. And every time they were done with what they said, of course, they all said the big saying from The 100, which is, may we meet again. So they all signed off with may we meet again at the end. It was pretty nice.
That's really cool.
But fans. There's 6 more episodes in the season. I think it comes back second week of August. And of course, they had no trailer for the final 6 episodes. And I was so bummed. It was like,
now, do you think that was intentional? Like they don't want to give anything away, though?
Or just, I mean, where they are right now in the show, anything I think they showed after this point would probably give stuff away for sure. Because there was a pretty big reveal in the episode that went off just before the mini break that they took. So
you mentioned the fan questions. On a bunch of the animated panels that I watch, they actually brought a bunch of fans onto the Zoom.
Oh, that's with cool. Them.
And so it was more like you were at the panel where they bring the people up to the mics and have them on the video and stuff. So that was pretty neat.
Then my last two I had was over on HBO.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Had a really good fun time with the first season of His Dark Materials. So His Dark Materials is coming this fall in November to HBO and HBO Max. We thought that at the end of season 1, they were crossing over from their world to our world. But it turns out that there are many other worlds than these. Hmm. So fans that were upset about The Dark Tower getting canceled over at Amazon, His Dark Materials may be your best next option if you want to look for other worlds and other different timelines and creatures and characters.
You watched the first season. Is it worth investing in?
I thought so. I thought it was. I mean, I've never really dug into the books as much as I'm probably sure Arjun might have had. But I thought the first season was fairly entertaining. I mean, it's slow in parts, right? It's not as bombastic and battle sequences and things of that nature, but there's enough suspense and enough intrigue that it keeps making you ask questions of like, who is this? Why is this happening? Where is it going? And it holds your attention for the entire 8 episodes to get to the payoff where you're like, oh, I want to see season 2. So I think season 2 is where we're going to get more of the bombasticness in the story.
I kind of like just totally on that show when it came out. And then I later found Ruth Wilson through Luther. And yep. She's so fantastic in that. And then, of course, Hamilton. So I found Lin-Manuel Miranda. So now I'm really excited to maybe check the show out. So that's why I was kind of looking for a...
And, of course, Daphne is the lead, yep. Right? So, from Logan. So the whole cast is fantastic. They all play the parts really, really well.
I need to check it out.
Lin-Manuel and Daphne have this real interesting dynamic between the two of them. And then that dynamic kind of gets ripped apart at the end of the first season.
Cool.
And so... how their characters.
Thanks for taking that away from me. So I know that's coming.
Bah, it's in the book.
Troy, I didn't read this book. I don't know.
So His Dark Materials season 2, you can check that panel out. It was actually really well moderated. I thought the moderator was very knowledgeable and very good for this particular panel. So from one of those industry types, but the one I think everybody's waiting for starts August 16th
yes.
on HBO, just around the corner, and that is Lovecraft Country. And this is coming to you from Jordan Peele and J.J. Abrams, architected and created by Misha Green. It's based on Matt Ruff's novel of the same name, Lovecraft Country. But what I love about this whole thing is that H.P. Lovecraft, was an author back in the 20s and 30s. And he wrote all about beasts and monsters and, sci-fi type stuff, way back in the day. And this particular story is going to be following a black family as they figure out what their birthright is as they fight actual literal monsters, but they also fight the monster, of course, of racism in the Jim Crow era of 1955. And so as they travel across the country, they're actually intertwined with a secret society called the Sons of Adam. And so you have white people and then the black people and they're fighting, but then the white people are also kind of enticing the black people to come into this club. And then they're all fighting these monsters at the same time. And the panel was just really great. It was just a celebration of blackness in the current Black Lives Matter movement. They praised all of the black lovemaking. There was like real black love, and diving into this is really interesting, especially when you think about H.P. Lovecraft and where he was originally in his stance against African-American culture. There's actually a poem, which we won't say the name on this podcast, but you can go look up the Wikipedia page for H.P. Lovecraft and find the poem.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised by that.
It's a bit shocking. And when you read through the poem and understand what the poem is saying, it's basically comparing African-Americans to beasts. And so now we actually have African-Americans fighting beasts in the sense of monsters and racism. So it's almost like a big giant middle finger to H.P. Lovecraft. And I think that's completely awesome.
Well, also embracing Lovecraft. That's the interesting part about it. It's like embracing the creativity that he had, but not his personal mantras.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Which is totally interesting. You know what I love about that, though? Because I did watch a lot of that, too. But what I loved about that was it was very much about you can appreciate the art without appreciating the artist is what I got.
Correct.
That same vibe, which I like.
Absolutely. And Journey Smollett is in this. She's fabulous in everything she does. There's a whole slew of people. And it's just going to be so exciting to watch. Again, it comes out on August 16th. Lovecraft Country from HBO. Definitely check it out. You know, J.J. Abrams' name is behind it, so I'm sure it's going to have some mystery box piece to it in some way, shape, or form.
I'm sure.
But they talked a lot about generalist trauma, generational trauma, right? So it's like these things are still happening to the grandparents who've experienced these things in the 50s are now experiencing again today. So to see three generations on this show working together to solve the mystery, I think it'll be very interesting. It's very telling in what we're going through right now.
Yeah. You know, there's one other panel that you watch called The Blacklist, right? You watch that?
We did
this whole podcast on The Blacklist. And I got to tell you, they were talking about the final episode and how they animated a big portion of it. And I got to say, we did an interview and we did a whole bunch. I think ours is a little better. I'm just saying what we did.
Yeah, it was pretty much the same stuff that we covered over at theblacklistexposed.com. For episode 719, we talked to the editors and the creator on our show. This panel did add a little bit of flavor with the two guys from Proof Inc., who were the actual animators. So they actually had some pretty good stories about how they had stock footage and they had to have, Channing Tatum had to be the character for everybody. So Megan was Channing Tatum, yeah. Red was Channing Tatum. So it was kind of interesting to hear how they had him stand in for all these people and just the whole, like they would work during the day, UK time, send over the stuff so that when John and John woke up in LA, then they had stuff to react to. And just the fact that he did it in 5 weeks is amazing. And this is something that the Proof Inc. guys have never done before because they've done like, you know, the pre-screening stuff for Wonder Woman and the Marvel movies. And, you know, this was all new to them. So the fact that it all worked itself out and happened for episode 719 was great. And then John Eisendrath confirmed that the three episodes that we lost at the end of season 7 will be the kickstart to season 8.
And whenever that shall happen.
Whenever that happens.
Yeah.
Liz's actions at the end of the 7th season will have repercussions very quickly in the start of the 8th season. So you can check that out.
I would say skip their panel and just go to theblacklistexposed.com and listen to our interviews. They were better.
For sure. And we have the panel up there on our site. So if you listen to ours, you'll get the other panel too.
Sure, but just listen to ours. All right, so here's my panel. We're moving on to Hellstrom, which comes out on Hulu October 16th. Damon and Anna Hellstrom are the son and daughter of a mysterious and powerful serial killer. Wink, wink, nod, nod, might be the devil. The siblings have a complicated dynamic as they track down the terrorizing worst of humanity, each with their attitude and skills. Now, this panel, didn't love it. It took 10 minutes before it really started going. It was an, you know, your average Joe panel. But the trailer for Hellstrom makes the show really fascinating. It's 10 episodes. It's going to be on Hulu again, October 16th. I know you saw this one too, Kyle. Did you like the trailer? I mean, this is a new show. It's a, I think, Marvel comic. What did you feel like Hellstrom could be good?
Yeah, I thought the trailer looked interesting. I kind of zoned out afterwards because that panel left me to, I didn't really care for the panel itself. But yeah, the trailer looked, I'm definitely planning on checking that one out when it comes.
Yeah, it looks like a really interesting show.
Well, you did have to sleep at some point, right? So one of these had to be a nap.
And one of my favorite panels, and I was pleasantly surprised because this is one where I kind of just put it on because I felt like I should watch it for this podcast. Didn't necessarily know if I really needed to, but New Mutants. New Mutants had a panel where it had everybody, and Anya Taylor-Joy, it had Maisie Williams, you know, everybody that's in this cast for this X-Men movie about these crazy people and their powers that has been in the can for like 2 or 3 years. So basically Maisie Williams was 9 years old, I think, when this thing was done. They've delayed. And how they opened the entire panel up was with making fun of the fact that their movie has been delayed multiple times, and the actors that played them while they were young when they made it, they are much older now. They were like 5 years older now, so they're now adults. It was a great way to start it because they totally own the moment. They're like, yeah, we know we've moved this movie around a lot, but it's finally coming out. They say August 28th in theaters. We all know what that means. Maybe, maybe not. It depends on what theaters do. And the same token, I do feel like they're committed to a theatrical release. It really feels like that. They talked about how the movie was not supposed to be rated R, like widely publicized. It was always going to be PG-13, so they don't know why that got out there. And they did show the first scene of the movie, which I thought made the movie look really interesting. I mean, you know, a lot of people are trashing it, just assuming it must be awful because it's been delayed and everything. And I still think it's to get out of the stink of Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix, personally. You know, we'll find out. But this looked really good. I thought what I saw looked really good. And I would definitely want to see the movie now based on that scene. Either one of you guys check this out at all?
I skimmed through the panel. I didn't watch the clip, but yeah, I tend to skip the movie panels, but this I skimmed through because someone said they were giving away a poster, so I was skimming through looking for that information.
what a greedy son of a bitch.
I put it on my calendar, but I just thought it was going to get canceled, so I didn't bother going.
It probably will. I mean, I would make sure that calendar is movable, you know?
Absolutely.
Don't use a magic marker on that. Just like a stick 'em. Then we move to Constantine. They had their 15th anniversary panel. They had Keanu Reeves. He's there for two panels. Talk about the other one in a little bit. But it was basically, I mean, Keanu Reeves and the filmmakers, Francis Lawrence and the filmmakers involved that were just reminiscing on 15 years of this movie. But one of the highlights from the panel was they said that the film earned an R rating sheerly for mood. There was nothing in it that actually would garner an R rating today, which they felt like was really an insult because their movie should have been a PG-13. They shot it as a PG-13 film. And if they would have known that they could have gone for an R rating, they would have. So they were actually quite rife about that, you know, rife with the details on that. And they were very unhappy. That was an interesting fact. I did not know that. I have never known that. And you guys don't care. All right. Antlers had a panel, but no new information there. Scott Cooper made a horror film on the Wendigo myth. Del Toro produced it. But they also talked about filmmaking. And it was more of an introspective panel, one that I really enjoyed watching. And I would recommend everybody tries to watch it. They did show clips from Antlers and how it's really focused on Native American history, but it's not trying to, as Scott Cooper said, I'm not trying to make message movies. I want to make movies that might also have a message. And that's what he's trying to do with Antlers. He wanted to make a straight up horror movie, and he thinks everybody should get pretty excited. Kerry Russell's in this too, Troy. So this is right up your wheelhouse.
Was this delayed? I seem to remember seeing the trailer in the theater like ages
ago. Yeah, it was supposed to come out in the spring, and I don't know if you heard, but they shut some stuff down. Yeah, that's why.
So are they still trying to make it theater-based, or is it going to go to...
No, it's coming out in theaters. Del Toro was very committed to the theatrical experience if possible.
Okay.
Yep. The Boys! That was a fun one. If you can find that panel, it's definitely worth watching. It's really funny watching Carl Urban just dominate for the first 15 minutes where it's just like, are you going to let anybody else talk to him? I mean, he's just going. But he's so fun to watch. You didn't care. They had a really lively panel. It was a good conversation. We got some major details that season 3 has already been renewed. So they are definitely coming back after this season 2, which comes out September 4th. Now, the seasons are going to be different, though. And I think this is kind of known, but in case people weren't aware. So Amazon is doing The Boys different this time. You're not getting all episodes at once. You're getting 3 episodes that'll drop on September 4th, and then it's going weekly. And once it goes weekly, or it might be for the 3 episodes as well, there's going to be an after show for each episode with Aisha Tyler hosting it. Now, I don't know. I kind of want to stop for a second and pause and ask you guys, what do you think about that? Now we are going to... We've been treated with this whole binge culture, right? We're now addicts. I want everything dropped at once. I don't want a break. I want it all at once. I can watch it all and then move on to my next show. And now Prime, which has been doing that, they adopted Netflix's philosophy. Now they are changing it, saying, we want to go back to weekly. We're going to take the Disney Plus approach. We want people talking about our shows. We want people getting online and discussing what happened. We don't want everything out there at once. What do you guys think?
I personally prefer the weekly release. I think it's so much better because you don't feel like you have to rush and watch 8 hours of something before, or else you'll be spoiled. Plus, now you can actually talk about the show. You don't have to say, oh, wait, where did you get, what episode are you up to? Where can I talk to, what can I talk about? We're now, like, everyone can find an hour to watch a show in a week, and then you can actually have a discussion about the show. So we're back to, like, the old days when people actually watch TV on a schedule, which I think is actually nice.
I think the challenge here, it's like twofold, right? Because the reason why you would normally do the, here's the 3 teaser, that's what Apple TV Plus did, right? It was, here's 3 episodes of The Morning Show or For All Mankind, and now you got to go weekly from here on out. And the reason they do that is because otherwise you do the free trial, you binge the thing, and you drop the subscription. Amazon doesn't have that problem because you're buying into Amazon Prime for the year if you're doing the shipping side. And so you're getting Prime for free. I mean, you can buy the video service by itself independently, but most people are already buying the shipping and getting the TV service for free. So there's no reason for them to not drop it all at once. So the fact that they're literally creating community is great from a podcasting perspective, because it's the one thing that we always said, if we're going to move to a streaming culture and not do cable or even broadcast anymore, then, you know, TV fan podcasts like the one Aaron and I do for The Blacklist, like, it's hard to do a Stranger Things podcast when everybody watches all 8 episodes in the first day. And so I love that they're doing an after show, having the conversations, Talking Dead type style, because you just, there's extra things you get to learn about the environment, and it makes the brand sticky. And the more they make The Boys brand sticky, it makes the Amazon brand sticky. And so from an Amazon perspective, I think this is a great business move. As a TV fan, I don't know, I like The Boys, so I'm going to have to probably go to the week by week, but I'm going to try to hold out as long as I can to watch as many at once as I possibly can.
I feel like you just said,
I want to get behind.
I feel like you just said 2 things at once. You started off saying Amazon, like, there's no reason for them to do it. Then midway, you're like, but I think it's a great business plan. Like, what just happened? Did we just take a turn? I didn't know where we ended up here. So are you on board with this or not on board? I'm confused.
Well, I mean, like in the traditional sense, there's no reason for Amazon to do it. They do not need to do this to keep subscribers. That's why other services would do that.
Well, but have you thought that maybe they want people to be buzzing about it so that they're talking about it, talking it up, saying Amazon Prime is hitting on, you know, because they're all about algorithms. So right. If they jazz up the conversation, their algorithm's going to jazz up, and therefore Prime is going to be highlighted on, it's going to be trending for weeks as opposed to just a week. I think exactly. That might be what they're doing.
I think that's why they're doing it. Yeah. And that's why they're doing the after show. And Aisha Tyler was great. Like, the panel, she was awesome.
She's
like
a great host.
If she keeps more of that going for the after show, I'll be in weekly just for the after show. The episodes will be a secondary point, because I think the after show is going to be a lot more fun. But man, the clip they showed, oh my gosh, the clip was so funny. So funny.
I am stoked for The Boys season 3. I am stoked. Or season 2, I'm sorry. And 3.
And 3.
Yeah. All right, that's The Boys. So
Free Willy.
I just started rewatching season 1, and when he blows the guys up, blows the guy up through his ass, I just...
Oh, the suppository?
Oh, yeah. My God. I was in tears.
into. See, that's another problem with the binge thing. Like, I watched it all in one day before, so it feels like forever since I saw season one. I don't really remember all the details, where if it was spread out more, you think about it more.
Maybe. I mean, you know what? That might help your muscle memory, because you also will talk about it more. As opposed to, a lot of these shows where I'll watch all 8 or 10 episodes, I'll talk about it on the podcast once and then be done with it. And I never have a conversation about it again. Where Game of Thrones, shows like that, comes out weekly, talking throughout the entire season.
I have to say, because HBO still puts their stuff out weekly and nobody's complained.
Nope. And I'm glad they do, because you know what? I love Perry Mason, but I don't think I would want to watch that all at once. I like getting it fed to me week after week after week. Yeah. All right. Well, there was a Living Dead panel where they had author Daniel Krauss, who talked about the new book, The Living Dead and the Legacy of George A. Romero. He was the author that was selected by the family, as well as publishers, to complete George A. Romero's final novel for his Living Dead world, to basically complete his Living Dead world. And that book is coming out August 4th. Now, I will tell you, the panel was a lovely panel, but there's an interview coming out that I did with him later this week. So just listen to that, because that is better. I promise you. That's all I'm going to say about that. Now we've got John Davenport here to talk about the Dresden Files real quick. All right. We are breaking into the Comic-Con because I want to bring you a side panel with John Davenport, who is not here for the whole thing because he didn't watch 47 Comic-Con panels, but he did watch the Dresden panel. Tell us about this one, man.
Well, it was a great panel. Really, it just boiled down to an interview that actually happened a few months before the release of the most recent book, which is Dresden Files Peace Talks. And it was a fascinating listen because it was actually the first time for me that I've actually listened to Jim Butcher talk about his characters. And it was
that's the writer's name, right? Jim Butcher?
Yep. Jim Butcher is the writer. Harry Blackthorne Copperfield Dresden is the name of the character. I don't know why his name is so long. Just makes it a little bit more interesting, I guess.
Sure. Because everybody's cooler with four names, I guess.
You know, it's like it's very Latin of them.
I don't know what the hell that meant, but I'm going with it. I'm riding you. Wait, no, I'm riding with you. I'm not riding you. Why did this? I mean, you're a huge fan of these books, and I don't really know the character. So I've seen the TV show that was on a few years
2007.
Ago now. Yeah. Tell people basically what this character is, just like in short summation.
The short of it is as far as like, if you want to think about it and more of a concept idea, take the idea of Harry Potter, throw in a Mickey Spillane novel, and that's what you get out of Dresden. It's a
magical noir.
It's a noir detective series that centers around Chicago, and the main character just happens to be a wizard who lives in modern day Chicago, and his follies as far as living through life at being a wizard.
Okay, it sounds really cool. So what did the panel add to the book? Because the new book just came out, right? Because that's what you were off last week, because you were reading this book, this wonderful book.
Well, it's been a great book. Now, as far as adding to the new book, it actually explained what I assumed was going to be the story as to why we're actually getting a book this month, which is July, and then we're going to get a book in September as well. And what happened is that Jim was trying to build a better mousetrap for Dresden, because really, he looks at Dresden as, even though he loves the character, he looks at it as Mr. Bill, if you remember Saturday Night Live.
Mr. Bill!
Yeah. Oh, no! You know, he thinks of all these different ways just to mess up Harry's life, and he takes so much joy and pleasure in doing so. And I believe partially he takes so much joy is because the fans of the series are like, what are you doing to Harry, god damn it? But he was trying to build this better mousetrap, but it turned into this better mousetrap was too much of a mousetrap, and it was really way too convoluted. So he had to actually cut the story in half, add a better ending to the first half of the story, and then add a better beginning to the second half of the story, and then he got two books out of it.
Interesting. And so he wants them, did he want them released so close together simply because they're still connected?
Because they're originally going to be one story? Close together because, number one, he didn't want, it's been like 4 or 5 years since the last book. So he didn't want to create a situation where we get this big cliffhanger of an ending, and then we got to wait God knows how long until the next book. He didn't want to be that author. He actually wanted it to be the exact next month, but the reason why he didn't is because, number one, his his publisher is like, this has got to be a quarterly thing. You can't have two books in one quarter. So that's one reason why they cut it. The other reason why they made it to the point where it's two books is because he would have had a $50 hardcover novel to be try to sell people, and he didn't want to do that either.
Well, that's cool. So did you come out of this with a little bit more respect for your author, or did you just get more excited for the next book?
I got a lot of respect for him because a lot of the things that he said, it was very, I thought it was very true as far as being a creative, which is he has a lot of trouble keeping track of everything. So thank God there's a huge fan base for Dresden, because one of the things he does is whenever he gets stuck, he's like, wait a minute, how many kids does this family have again? Let me go to the fan wiki page to find out.
Does he really?
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
Well, it is awesome, and his explanation for it is that we all only have, as far as fans are concerned, only have to track what has happened. He has to track what could have been, what will be, and what has happened, and they all turn into some sort of amalgamation of one story in his mind. So that's knowing cool. that the fans were out there creating this was something that I thought was very cool. As far, and his use of it was something that I thought was very cool, too. And the way he talks about his characters, I don't watch a lot of authors talk, but the way he talks about his characters was very much as if he's talking about real people. And I thought that was just a really cool aspect.
Well, thanks for popping in for that little jaunt, man, because I wouldn't have understood any of that panel if I watched it. I'd have been like, who's Dresden again? It's that guy John won't show up about. That guy.
Hey, they did hint to a couple things about what might be coming on the horizon. Now, I know a few years ago we talked about there was going to be a revival of the show, or not really a revival of the show, but a new show to come. Mm-hmm. And he sort of didn't answer by not answering. And he even acknowledged the fact that he answers it or doesn't answer. Even if he doesn't answer, it's still an answer that people know what's going to go with it.
So, something's in the works is what you're getting out of it.
Yeah, it's something's in the works. And, something else that came up in the interview that I thought was interesting, and the reason why I think about it as it being interesting is that the interviewer asked him, what aspect of Dresden does he not care about the most? And Jim said that his appearance, he doesn't care about the most, which I think is interesting just because if you look at like Jack Reacher's, like the novels are so dependent on his daunting size.
Stature. Yeah. His stature.
Yeah. And then you get to the movie and the movie, like though the movie is good and fine,
he's not Jack Reacher from the books. No.
Right. It's not Jack Reacher from the books, but a lot of the way people interact with Tom Cruise would make so much more sense if Tom Cruise was 6'5".
Yes. 100%. As a fan of those books, trust me, as much as I love those movies, they are not the Jack Reacher from the books at all.
Right.
Well, a little bit, but not. Yeah. Yeah. Right. He's not intimidating. You see him coming, you're like, oh, damn. You know, he's right. A big brute coming your way.
And he said that he's not interested in whatever Harry Dresden looks like and whatever comes up next. And to me, it's kind of a mistake because as far as the writing is concerned, the writing makes such a big deal about the fact that Harry is 6'9".
Oh, wow. That's very tall. He's a basketball player?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Kind of missed his calling, dude, because if he's just like 7 foot tall and he's a wizard, he can make every ball go in. Therefore, be a rich basketball player.
Yes and no. Filthy see rich. The thing about being a wizard in this series of books, and this is like getting way deep in the baseball.
That was a joke. You didn't really need to go much further than that, but okay, let's go.
I feel like you opened a door and I have to go down it.
I regret it already.
One of the things that I think is really cool about the series and how it works is that they take away a lot of the modern accoutrement from Harry. So Harry can't have really a modern car. He can't have phones. He can't have beepers. Anything that's modern, computerized, or anything else like that, he can't have. Because the trick about being a wizard is that in this world is that... back in the day when you think about witches and they used to say like boils and pustules and all that, and that's really their energy interacting with their body. Well, that sort of morphed over the years and became something where that same energy just affects the world around them, where you can't have modern stuff. So he can't go to the movies unless he goes to a drive-in movie theater. He can't go
just like us.
Yeah, isn't that pretty funny? Much. Yeah. So it's just really cool how he built it. So yeah, if you haven't noticed, I'm a fan.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, that's what Comic-Con's all about, right? It's about fandom.
Right, it absolutely.
Is. Okay, everybody, check out the new book. And what is the new book? Because you just finished it. What is it?
It is called Peace Talks. And then in September, we have Battlegrounds.
Peace Talks and Battlegrounds. I get it. One's leading to the next.
Right.
It works. It works. The whole thing feels magical. All right. Thanks, John. I'll let you get back to life. And we're going to get back to our Comic-Con panel.
All right, man. Have a good time.
Okay. Now back to me. Charlize Theron. I watched her panel. She basically talked for about an hour about her trajectory from an actress, a dramatic actress, into an action heroine. And she was talking about how difficult it was, especially she started later in her 30s, and she's kind of segueing to this action star in her 30s, and she's segueing to this action star, and all the differences it was that took place for her. She was talking about the Italian job and said they set her up with 6 weeks more car training than everyone else, which she found insulting. And, you know, it was fascinating to kind of get the perspective of a woman trying to be an action heroine in this world. And she's at a place where, you know, she doesn't have to soft pedal anything. You know, she's Charlize Theron. She can say whatever she wants, and she's going to. But she also was very clear that she does get afraid. You know, she did Aeon Flux and that failed. And she is afraid that if she makes a movie that is not received well in the action genre, she'll be banned forever. You know, she feels like it's a different world than sometimes dramatic fare. So it was really interesting to get her perspective, especially from a woman. She talked about Mad Max and how that was one of her hardest roles. A lot of great stuff in there that I thought people might want to, if you're a fan of Charlize Theron, you might want to check out. She talks about The Old Guard as well. An Evening with Kevin Smith. This is where I'm happy, sad. Happy, sad? I think Kevin Smith is one of the best oral moderators that we have. I really just truly, I've loved this man for a very, very long time. And his Evening with Kevin Smith is a Comic-Con staple. Now, you don't know this, Troy, but Kyle does. Every single year, he does basically 90 minutes of him doing what he's done for many years, which is tell Hollywood stories and talk about his thoughts on comic films and sci-fi genre films of all sorts, and just where he stands in the world. And that part is always great. He is always entertaining. I mean, there's a reason why his podcasts are so successful. The guy knows how to speak. He showed a trailer for Kilroy Was Here, which is his new movie. I just wish he would get back to making movies that didn't look awful. And that's the less happy part, because I feel like, and, you know, he'd probably be the first to agree that his movies haven't been great lately. But I used to love Kevin Smith movies. Like, whenever a Kevin Smith movie was coming out, I would race to the theater to see it. Now I'm scared to watch them because I don't know what we're going to get, but I'm sure I'm not going to like it much. And I don't know if it's the weed or what, but it's just very disappointing to see a filmmaker you love so much and still absolutely respect and just love his energy and love how he's kind of made his own career as a moderator. Just as a filmmaker, really just go downhill. And I'd love to say something positive about this trailer, and I just couldn't find anything. Did you guys, either one of you, see it?
Did see it, but I remember he spoke at Podcast Movement a few years ago. And I have to wonder, because I think this is the movie he made with a bunch of college filmmakers.
Students, yeah, yeah.
And so in this talk that he did at Podcast Movement, he talked about the bringing your community along and being there for your community and for your friends. And he talked about how obviously he brought back, you know, Jay and from his drug overdose and things of that nature. So I think maybe, you know, he's focusing more on giving people the ability and the chance to make it in Hollywood. And so maybe he's focusing more on that, about expanding the community and giving people the opportunity just to get their work out there,
yeah,
versus focusing on himself. And I think that'd be admirable if that's what it's really about. Now, if it's about, like, you know, the weeds finally caught up to him, different story, right? But I'm gonna hope that he's, like, from what he said at Podcast Movement, it's more around, you know, the fact that he's, like, trying to, like, help community, bring community. You know, we're one tribe, we're all working together. And if that's kind of where he was coming from with this particular property, it's a good thing. You know, it's a bunch of people that would never have gotten a chance before.
And he's
it's not good.
His movies haven't been, like, good. But Tusk is the last one that really touched the aura of good. And that was half a good movie, and half a movie's like, what? And it just feels like it's been since then, and it's very sad as somebody who's always been a fan and still am a fan of the person himself. I think he's a wonderful guy, and he seems like a really righteous dude. There's nothing negative you can say about him as a person. I just feel like his filmmaking has really struggled as of late.
Have you been watching his sitcom that he's been doing for the Celebrity Show Off TV series on TBS?
No, is that any good?
It's actually kind of funny. It's basically done in quarantine. It's like him, his daughter, and her daughter's boyfriend moves in. And so he's been doing the same running sitcom each week for this Celebrity Show Off TV series.
You know what? Hey, if you find a niche and it works for you, that's fantastic. I just feel like filmmaking, he doesn't seem to have the same passion for that anymore. Because I know he's got the talent. He just isn't applying it for some reason. Yeah, well, I'm definitely not dishing on Kevin Smith. I love the guy. I didn't mean that as a negative. And speaking of a segue, he hosted the Bill and Ted Face the Music panel, which he did a great job. Alex Winter's there, Keanu Reeves is there, and we just found out that they have announced that Bill and Ted Face the Music will go straight to video on demand in select theater September 1st. This is another casualty of the theater closures. So you will get to see it at home. And the panel is actually a lot of fun. So if you want to seek that out, they talk about the fun history of putting the movie together. Keanu loves these films and these characters. He definitely goes on about that quite a bit, which, I mean, he just looks stoked the whole time he's talking about them. Samara Weaving is actually in this movie, who I love her. Love her. She's Ready or Not, if you haven't seen it, my God, what a great movie. And she was talking about how the hardest thing for her was not laughing because Ted killed her uncle in The Matrix. And that's a fun little fact because Hugo Weaving's her uncle. And there was this cool little tidbit. Now, here's what I want to do, everybody. If you don't want to hear a spoiler for Bill and Ted Face the Music, it's kind of a spoiler. Just go ahead, skip ahead 30 seconds. You guys that are on the podcast, you might want to, you know, just don't listen. Ready? Da, 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 da. Skip ahead, skip ahead, skip ahead. George Carlin is making a cameo. Shh, that's all I'm saying. All right, there you go. Bill and Ted Face the Music. I think if you're a fan of those films, you're going to be a fan of the movie. Nothing you guys don't get. Like, be better, be more excellent to each other. Seriously, this is a good thing. Bill and Ted Face the Music, no excitement at all. No energy from you two.
I had my headphones out because I didn't want to hear the spoiler. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually glad it's going to be a VOD release.
I'm at.
We can actually watch it at home.
VOD, yes. Because I remember Bogus Journey and going like, I am so disappointed in this movie. Like, so disappointed. So this could be really, really great and a fantastic close, or it could be really, really bad. And if it's really, really bad in the theater, I think it's got more forgiveness if it's a VOD release at home. So you might actually enjoy it a little bit more. So
I have faith.
Still not paying $20 to rent it, though, if I can buy it for $20 six weeks later.
You're not a big Wild Stallion fan, is that what you're saying?
I am a Wild Stallion fan, but Tenet, I might pay $20 to see on day one as a rental. But Bill and Ted's, I'm not paying $20 for.
I hate to break it to you, but Christopher Nolan came out and Warner Brothers came out, and they both said, never going to happen. So everybody can stop. Tenet will never, ever, ever be released at home before theaters.
Hey, Nolan, I'll pay $40 to rent it.
Still said
just
no.
Just release it at home.
Chris, guess what he doesn't need? Your money. He's fine. You know what? The only thing about Bill and Ted Face the Music that worries me is I don't know if I can watch a whole movie with Keanu Reeves without facial hair now. Because it looks weird now.
Well, he has facial hair, right? It's just
growing
from his head because his hair is so long. It makes up the beard.
True. But
see, I don't think I could watch it with him with facial hair. I'm happy to hear that he shaved to be Ted again.
No, I am glad that he did. And I think, you know, that's great. It's just I've gotten so accustomed to the beard and it's kind of like a part of his character now that when I see him without it, I was like, oh, is he okay? It's just, you know, I'm reminded that, you know what? He has aged a little bit. He's not quite the young guy he used to be. It was interesting. All right. So our last panel, this is one that I recommend everybody go watch because if you're a fan of Nathan Fillion, first of all, but also really want to know what Comic-Con is like, this is the panel in my mind that captured the Comic-Con experience the most because it's Nathan Fillion and he's talking about different things, whether it be in films and film or television, mostly television, with his friends, with his former co-stars. He's talking with some of his Castle co-stars. No, not Daniel. He's talking with his former Firefly co-stars. Anybody else notice she didn't show up? I know I did.
Oh, I noticed. Yeah. I didn't. I figured she wasn't going to.
Joss Whedon shows up, which he had a panel and that got pulled, and that's probably, you know, a Ray Fisher situation. But he isn't in this, and they do talk quite extensively about some different aspects of their relationship and making TV shows and film. And I loved it because it was a positive, upbeat, all-encompassing look at an actor, a genre actor that people love, but he's not quite like this huge actor. He's not a Keanu Reeves. He's not a, you know, giant movie star. He is Nathan Fillion. He's the guy that people just like. And these are the people that like him and wanted to talk to him about just his career and why people like him. It was just a fascinating panel. What'd you think, Kyle? You watched it too.
Yeah, I thought it was a really nice way to end the con. It was my last of my 68 panels or whatever. And I thought it was a nice, happy, fun way to end the con for me. Like, also, because I watched all these shows, Firefly, Castle, The Rookie. Like, I've been watching all of these, so it's great to see all these people come back and talk with him. Like, especially, like, the daughter from Castle, who's now all grown up, and she was talking to him, and
like, he's a mentor for him.
Yeah. And there was a lot of that going back and forth, people telling what they learned from him and what he told, like, the other guys from Castle, what he learned from them, like how to do exposition scenes, which he now probably uses on The Rookie a lot. And so, I just thought it was a really nice panel.
Troy, did you get a chance? You didn't get a chance to see it, right?
I did not get a chance to see that one. I ran out of time, but I will be watching it as soon as we hang up here.
Yeah. If you guys are looking for, and this might be the one that I embed in the post, because if you're at thehollywoodoutsider.com, because if you're looking for something that captures that experience, that's the panel that I think does it the best. All right, that does it. There's a whole lot of news and items. You know, it's a little less fun. This episode is more about getting the deets out there and apparently learning that if you want to get a work in Hollywood, if you're an animator, you can work even during a pandemic, which is good to know.
And Kyle did dress up as cosplay. He dressed up as a ho. Listener.
Yeah, you're wearing the Imaho shirt. Look at that. Available at T Public. That's beautiful. Thanks, man. That's loyalty. Brand. That's going to do it. Guys, where can people find you? Kyle, where can people find you?
You can find me at noreruns.net and also the TV Times 3 podcast. But that's turned it into a monthly podcast these days.
All right. What about you, Troy?
You can find me with Aaron over at theblacklistexposed.com, where we have the better version of the art of animation behind the 719 episodes. So check that out. You can also hear on the Hollywood Outsider here, Beyond Westworld at beyondwestworldpodcast.com. Season 3 wrapped, and it was a good third season, so check that out.
Yeah, it was a hoot. And we're at thehollywoodoutsider.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember to come back later because we're going to have an interview with the Living Dead writer, Daniel Cross, which I thought was really great, especially if you're fans of Romero. And obviously, if you're a Comic-Con fan, you're going to want to check that out. That's going to do it for this episode, though. Remember, the guys will be back with me next week, Amanda and John. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, which won't be for a while. So the next time you watch TV and you just watch a bunch of panels like Kyle just did, buy popcorn.